Welcome to Faith and Freedom. We hope to inform, inspire, and encourage you to stand up for faith and freedom as we discuss victories and challenges in the courts, in public policy, and in the culture. Faith and Freedom is brought to you by Liberty Counsel, a litigation, education, and policy organization. Join us now as we address the latest cultural issues across America and around the world.
Some people amazingly still think that separation of church and state is required by the Constitution, that it's actually part of the First Amendment, that that is what is mandated from our founders. And while on the one hand there is this idea that the government should not intermingle itself with and control religious institutions and churches, that does not mean that people of faith and values and Christian principles should not influence and be involved in the government. We're going to be talking about this myth of separation of church and state on Faith and Freedom. I'm Matt Staver, founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. Joining me is Matt Barber, the founder of barbedwire.com. Matt, you wrote an article recently, and it starts off by saying the church has a problem. It's one part fear, one part confusion, and one part apathy. Pastors, priests, and rabbis have long swallowed the false notion that all things religious and all things political are somehow mutually exclusive, that never the twain shall meet. I think that is part of the misinformation. It's part of the problem that we have not only with pastors and churches, but even with some of the people in the media.
And regrettably, it's a problem that has been fomented in large part by as we point out, you know, inaction on the parts of churches, and they've been given a convenient excuse for this inaction, and that is that secularist organizations and so-called progressive historical revisionists have done a wonderful job of creating this idea of separation of church and state, and that it means somehow that the state cannot allow any kind of reference to God or to Christianity. And in fact, that if a church or a pastor makes any mention of politics or of lobbying or of legislation, or particularly of any candidates that may be running for office, that they can lose their tax exempt status. Well, that simply is not true. That is a myth.
Yeah. Reverend Jerry Falwell said in 1980 in the victory or the landslide presidential election, or the time leading up to that particular election in 1980, he said that, quote, "I'm being accused of being controversial and political." He said, quote, "I'm not political, but moral issues that become political, I still fight. It isn't my fault that they've made these moral issues political, but because they have doesn't stop the preachers of the gospel from addressing them." He said, "What then is wrong?" He said, "I say the problem, first of all, is in the pulpits of America. We preachers must take the blame. For too long, we have fearfully stood back and failed to address the issues that are corrupting the republic." I repeat, Proverbs 14:34, "Righteousness exalteth a nation, not military might, though that's important, not financial resources, though that has been the enjoyment of this nation above all nations in the last 200 years, but spiritual power is the backbone, the strength of a nation," close quote. That's from the late Reverend Jerry Falwell.
And so I point out that it is not just within the church's purview, but Matt, I believe, and I think you do too, that it's the church's duty to insert itself into state matters relating to morality, to public policy, and to culture at large. And as the late Jerry Falwell points out here, it is they who have politicized these moral issues that belong within the purview of the church. They're not political issues. They're moral issues. They're religious issues inherently. And so, you know, they talk about the Establishment Clause, a mere 10 words that says that Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And as we've pointed out before, as Thomas Jefferson has said in a letter to Benjamin Rush, he said that, and he's often touted as the great, you know, church-state separationist. He says the First Amendment's Establishment Clause was intended to restrict Congress from affirmatively establishing through federal legislation a national Christian denomination. That's it. And he makes that clear in his letter to Benjamin Rush.
Yeah, that's right. The First Amendment and Justice Joseph Story, one of the first justices of the United States Supreme Court, He said that the First Amendment was designed to prevent political rivalry among the different sects. In other words, to prevent Episcopalians from having power over the Presbyterians and vice versa and so forth, but not to restrict religion. In fact, that religious freedom ought to be promoted and protected so far as it's not incompatible with the rights of conscience. That's Justice Joseph Story. And the First Amendment was designed in a way that would prevent government from establishing its own denomination. I mean, when you actually read the First Amendment itself, how far have we strayed from it? It says, Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion. Congress. Now, that's anyone who's got a governmental class in 101, governmental policies, knows that Congress is not your state legislature. Congress is not your school board. It's not your city hall with the nativity scene. It's the United States Congress up in Washington, D.C. Congress is not to make a law that establishes a religion and imposes it on the individual states. In fact, when the First Amendment was adopted, there were states that had individual established state religions, and that was not incompatible with the First Amendment. That was very compatible with the First Amendment. President Jefferson, you know, when he was president, wouldn't have days of fasting as president of the United States, but on the state legislature, he actually promoted a bill that required days of fasting on the state level.
Yeah, and that's why until as late as 1877, almost every state had its own official state religion. Massachusetts was the Congressional Church, for example, in 1833.
Yeah, you've got a clear indication of what the First Amendment was all about. In fact, even from Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson has this these couple of letters in which he says, when you put them both together, that the Second Amendment is more of a specific iteration of the Tenth Amendment. The Tenth Amendment says that the powers not given to the federal government belong to the states. The First Amendment says this is a specific example of a power not given to the federal government. That is, we're not going to allow the federal government to have any power to interfere with religion among the several states. That's a specific application of the broader Tenth Amendment catch-all provision, and that's in Thomas Jefferson's own words. Now, what we've had is, since the founding of this country, we had the Supreme Court with their justices inventing brand new law, partly because there was a justice on the Supreme Court who was anti-Catholic and ultimately wanted to have this separation of church and state, quoted Thomas Jefferson's letter and misstated in the Everson case that Thomas Jefferson had a major role in the adoption and drafting of the First Amendment. Of course, that is historically false and one of the bad pages of history of the Supreme Court. We have had a number of situations with the United States Supreme Court through our history in which the Supreme Court has made terrible mistakes. We, the people, have not pushed back. The Supreme Court, in this Everson case, ultimately reached to a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote in 1801 to the Danbury Baptist. Never before then, never after then, did he use the word separation of church and state. And it's been very clear what he meant by this. What he meant clearly was not this radical separation of faith from our public life. What he meant was that the government shall not establish a religion and impose it on the individual states, shall not make, for example, Presbyterianism, Calvinism, Episcopalianism, Anglicanism, whatever it might be, as the nationally established church. That's the intent and meaning of the First Amendment. Now, I encourage you to go to Liberty Counsel's website, lc.org. That's lc.org. We have a Patriots Handbook series, and one of them is the Patriots Handbook of Religious Freedom in Public Schools. Again, the Patriots Handbook series is a series of a number of pocket-sized booklets. One of them is the Handbook of Religious Freedom in Public Schools. It talks about what is permissible within the public school context. We have lots of other resources as well for you there at the Liberty Counsel website. Go to lc.org. Also, other Patriot handbooks are Political Action of Pastors and Churches, the Handbook of American Liberty, the Right to Bear Arms, the Essential Reasons to Stand with Israel, the Threat of Sharia on American Culture, and others. For more information, call us today at 407 875-1776. Stand With Liberty Council. Become not only a prayer supporter of this ministry, but a regular financial supporter of Liberty Council as well. Everything that we do at no cost to those whom we serve. And we couldn't do it without your prayers and without your specific financial support. So go to lc.org. That's lc.org. Or call us today, 407-875-1776. That's 407-875-1776. Or again, the website is lc.org.
You have been listening to Faith and Freedom with Matt Staver of Liberty Council. We hope that we have motivated you to stand up for your faith, family, and freedom. Working together, we can make a difference. Get informed and stay involved. Visit Liberty Council's website at lc.org. That's lc.org. And tune in next time right here for Faith and Freedom.